Everybody, this is Blake Ruby from San Antonio, Texas. I had a good day today. I went to this bar in downtown San Antonio where they had a fundraiser for a woman who was run over by a car back in February. And they were selling plates of food. And I took my karaoke equipment. I've got some karaoke equipment that I use every month. I go to the Wounded Warriors, I sing for them. And so I took it down there, and oh, there was a lot of people, and it was a good time. I sang about 10, 12 songs, and other people participated. They sang karaoke songs. The songs I sing, I memorize the lyrics, so I don't need to look at the screen, but I have a pretty large repertoire of songs. And I've got a lot of Eagles songs and Beatles, altogether over 100. And it's quite a challenge to keep up on those songs, and so I can remember all the words, but it's a lot of fun, it really is. I've never known anything like that before, where, you know, you start the music and it's like an adventure. And then remember the words, it's like magic. When you hear the music, and you get the timing right, and the harmony, it's an amazing thing. Anyway, so Norma, the woman that was hit by the car, she showed up later on. I started around 11 o'clock, and she got there around 3. And she was in a wheelchair. She's doing really well, it looked like, after what she had been through. And she was downtown San Antonio on a February night, riding a bicycle with some friends. And this young man, who apparently had been drinking, came along with his car and knocked her over and ran over her. And then, to make matters worse, he backed up over her again. And it's a miracle she didn't die, but she survived. And she looked good today, and I gave her a hug and wished her the best. And there were some friends of mine, co-workers actually, musicians, and they got the band together, and I think there was 3 bands, and they sang, each of them sang for maybe an hour or so, played for an hour or so. And there was one group of young men and women, I mean, like high school age, and they were really good. I was very impressed. Anyway, moving on. So in the show today, I'd like to talk about a few different things. Angels. I'd like to talk about angels. You know, it's really makes me curious as to how many people around the world might be listening to this. And if they speak English, maybe not. But internet radio is it's an incredible thing. And so, for those of you that don't know or haven't heard my previous shows, I am the author of a book called The Gray Brain and the Golden Soul. And the soul, I believe, is nothing more than the brain of the spirit. It has all of our memories of our pre-existence and our past lives. And it can tap into universal knowledge as well. So when we die, and that day we don't know in the future, then we're going to find ourselves in another existence, another life, if you will. Angels are around us daily. We don't see them like we don't see a lot of things because we have our five senses and the eyes are just part of the material world, if you know what I mean. So, some things are not meant to be visible because we're in a specific learning environment and we couldn't accomplish the mission that we're on if things were different. You know, if we could see everything, we could see God. But angels, I know there's a lot of people who have stories about angels. I think most people around the earth agree that they exist, and each of us has at least one angel who guards us, right? A guardian angel. Some more than one. And they're beautiful beings created by God. And they're very obedient to God, always, because that's the way God created them. And God doesn't make mistakes, right? I'd like to tell you the story of the chaplain in the chapel that we go to on Lackland Air Force Base. It's called Freedom Chapel. And his name is Chaplain Munoz. And he's a reserve Air Force major. He told us, the congregation, a story of angels in his life. The first story goes like this. He was driving down the road, going somewhere on a road trip with his family, his wife and his two children, I believe, if my memory serves me correct. And it was getting late at night, and driving down the road, he started getting tired, his eyes started getting weary. He looked at the clock in the car, and it said 2:30, I think he said, in the morning. Well, the next thing he knew, he woke up with a start. He was driving down the road in between two semis, and it was 20 minutes later. He had been driving for 20 minutes without being aware of it. And he found himself between two semis. 20 minutes had gone by. He does not remember what happened. The other story he gave us was even more amazing, I think. It was back in the days when he was young and rebellious, like we all are when we're young. And he was gambling into all those bad things, you know, drinking, gambling. And so he was walking down the road, and he had his phone. He was looking at his phone, and he said he used to walk very fast wherever he went, always very fast. And so he was looking at his phone and walking fast, and the next thing he knew, something grabbed him by the collar of the neck, his neck collar, and pulled him back just in time. He was about ready to walk into this street lamp, a metal pole. And he looked around him. There wasn't anything there. Well, if he'd walked into that pole, he could have potentially been killed. You know, we could walk 4 miles an hour. But if you're not aware, just imagine if you were walking fast somewhere with your eyes closed, with that momentum, and you walked into a metal pole. At the least, you're going to be severely injured. And I've heard other stories, too, about people getting saved. Roy Mills, in his book, The Soul's Remembrance, talks about how he was climbing this ladder. It was a tower, I think a water tower. And he got up maybe 10, 15 feet above the ground. Something distracted him, and he missed a step and he started falling backwards, and something pushed him back up on the ladder. Yes, it's true. Believe, they're out there. Yes. Well, tomorrow is Mother's Day, and my mother is in heaven. She was a good person. I wish everybody could have met my mother. Besides being a war baby from World War II, you know, and I believe suffering from PTSD like my father did, because she went through the bombing of London. And that kind of led her to drinking and smoking. It's understandable. But besides those vices, if you will, she was a good person. And she was very spiritual. How about you? Do you ever feel the call of the wild, the call of the spirit? Anyway, so my mother, she was a good mother to me. Both my parents gave me a lot of latitude growing up. I was able to work some things out on my own. They would always give me guidance, discipline me at times when I was younger, much younger. I still remember those beatings that I took, you know, whether with my mother's or my father's hand. A wooden spoon one time, my mother said she needed to hit me in the rear with a wooden spoon because I was 3 years old and I was going up on the road thinking I could go up to a car and give it a hug because they were so beautiful. I thought they were so beautiful. I would go, "Caw!" Back then she told me, "Caw!" And so the neighbors would see this, and they were all freaking out. I told my mother, "If you don't hit him with a wooden spoon, we're going to do it because we don't want to see him die." And so she did. I don't remember. Of course, I was 3 years old, but my parents, they disciplined me at times. And they were good, decent parents. Anyway, tomorrow's Mother's Day, and I think we should recognize, and I believe that it's coming more and more each day, that people are beginning to realize just how sacred, just how, I'm trying to find a way to describe it, women should be up there on a pedestal, you know what I mean, queens and princesses, because they are co-creators with God. For the men, it's hard to understand what it's like to have a baby grow inside of the body. But for women, it is an amazing thing. It's a miracle. They are co-creators with God. I mean, we all were born in our mother's wombs, right? All of us, women and men, boys and girls. And yet women don't get the respect they deserve because, as I was saying in my previous shows, we're going through evolution and the discrimination to people around the world. You know, back in the days when black people were enslaved, working on plantations, that's evolution. It's the value of life is not as high. The value of life is increasing as we evolve. People's rights, equality, is increasing as we evolve. It takes years. It's a very slow process. But my friends, women should be the dominant, I was going to say species, but of human beings. We should be living in a maternal society because they're the ones that have this special bond with the Creator. They grow babies in their bodies. Women need to be exalted, loved, and respected more. And you know, it's just recently, since they had the right to vote, and then women's liberation and equality, and even nowadays, you know, things aren't equal, they're not getting equal pay. But to all the women out there, happy Mother's Day, all the mothers, and all the future mothers, right? How about that? Two words, check that out. Future mothers. The next time, men, you have an unclean thought about a woman, don't forget to remember that they're also future mothers. Hello. Anyway, so happy Mother's Day. And now, moving on. You know, my book, it's all got to do with spirituality. Everything that I talk about is of a spiritual nature because, for one thing, with all the negativity going on in the world, I mean, you pick up the remote control for the television and surf through all the different channels, I guarantee you, nine times out of ten, those movies are going to be violent in some way. And I'm guilty in watching those movies, just like the next person, I suppose, but I try not to. I look around for a decent movie, you know, a not-so-violent movie, PG, you know. Hollywood needs to make more movies based on true stories. Do I hear an amen out there? These fantasy movies are garbage, really. And you get these same actors over and over again. Not that I don't enjoy them. I respect all the actors. My son's trying to be an actor, but let me rephrase that. I'm okay with them if they made some movies like some of these new movies on spirituality. Heaven is for real. As one example. And what's that other one with Jennifer Garner, I think her name is? I forget the name. The young daughter had a gastrointestinal disorder. And they were trying to get her treated. She was going through a lot of pain and she wound up falling inside this tree, right? And the next thing they know, she was cured of that illness. And she said she met Jesus. She had a near-death experience. What more evidence do we need, people? Some people are so obsessive about evidence. But a rational person must accept some things beyond having a physical object as evidence. In the movie Heaven is for Real, the young boy, besides meeting his grandfather, I think what's more important and more significant is that he met his sister. And when he approached her, she told him that she had died in her mother's tummy when her mother had a miscarriage. There's no way a 3, 4, 5-year-old could make a story like that up. If you believe that, well, you're never going to believe in some things, you know? And I think most people do believe. Maybe it's just a small minority of people that are the skeptics, and atheists, non-believers. Anyway, I've got something special. I've got something special for you. I'm going to read. I love reading out loud. I'm going to read this near-death experience. It's one of the best that I've ever read about before. It's about a man named Lou Famoso. As I've mentioned on previous shows, you can go to this one website called neardeath.com. Near-death.com. It is such a very comprehensive website on near-death experiences, everything dealing with spirituality. The man who put that together over the years is amazing. So anyway, you know Heaven Is For Real? You know the book and the movie. That young man, people really started to notice that near-death experience because it was a boy. But near-death experiences have been happening since the beginning of time. Even Plato. Remember Plato, the Greek philosopher? He had a near-death experience way back, I can't remember how many thousands of years. And then all throughout our history, there have been near-death experiences. They happen all the time. They're going to happen tonight and in the future. Lou Famoso's is one of the most incredible near-death experiences that I've ever read about. Here it goes. Lou Famoso is a Vietnam veteran having served two tours of duty there. Before he was to be discharged from the Navy in October of 1964, he had returned to the U.S. from Vietnam and was going to attend a huge party for a friend of his. It was 1963, and he had just bought a brand new model of the up-and-coming 1964 Mustang. I had one, Mach 1, 1971, beautiful car. He was running late for the party, so he was doing 100-plus miles an hour on an open stretch of road. With his radio blasting, he had nothing but a good night of partying on his mind. Suddenly, the front end of his car went nose down and dug into the asphalt. In less than a second, his Mustang flipped head over heels. So as not to slip into unconsciousness, he managed to count every one of those flips, thinking the last one would be the last one he'd have to count. It took 9 flips to finally cause his car to lose all the momentum necessary to bring it to a screeching halt. He managed to crawl out of what was left of the back window of his car and fell to the ground. What followed was a near-death experience so transcendental, Lou prefers to call it a life-after-death experience. Indeed, according to his doctor, it was a miracle that Lou survived. His encounter with the being of light, the archangels Michael and Gabriel, visions of the future, and the constellation of Orion makes his experience one of the notable near-death experiences I have read. And then there's all different parts here. I'm going to go through the tunnel towards the light. I entered what I thought looked like the Holland Tunnel without the cars and traffic and the ability to see what looked like light at its end. It was dark, but not black. The path was slightly illuminated from what I thought to be the sunlight shining from the other end. It's like I said, ladies and gentlemen, the sun is heaven. When you go through the space, you take away the eyes of the body, and you have the eyes of the spirit. You have our world, and you have the sun 93 million miles away. It is a world of fire. It is the fire of God, and the spirit can live in the fire. He says, as I was being drawn towards the light to the end of the tunnel, I carefully looked around, even squinting to see into the darker recesses. So I'm going to skip a little bit here and go towards his life review, an encounter with the being of light. Then in an instant, my entire life, starting from birth through the present, was flashing before my eyes like a strobe light at half speed. Frame after frame, some parts in freeze frame, if only for a second, then on to the next. I felt as if I was being subjected to a test to see if this was in fact the me that was supposed to be here. Then it ended as fast as it had begun. The last scene was that of a rolling mass of metal finally bursting into flames. And I was looking at the canvas again. He was looking at this canvas before the life review. Just took a drink of water. That was so good, I thought I'd take another. While staring into the vast whiteness, I glanced down at my body and used it for a reference, only to find the translucent outline I once had, which is like the spirit. The spirit looks like, has a translucent outline. It has the colors of the rainbow. It's like in the movie Ghost, you know, towards the end of the movie Ghost, Patrick Swayze, that bluish, still with all the colors of the rainbow body, just like your body right now. That's what the spirit looks like. Even with the facial characteristics and hair, even, that he once had was no longer there. I thought, how could this be? Am I now part of this empty white canvas? But if I were, then where are my thoughts coming from to be asking these questions? Instantly, I recognized a brilliant, glowing ball of gold headed my way. It grew larger as it grew nearer, and when it reached about the size of a beach ball, just above and in front of me, it radiated brilliantly and transformed into an indescribable being of pure light, now levitated right in front of me. It was larger than the tallest person I had ever seen, wider than two of me, but so evenly proportioned as to be of magnificent stature. Its features were outlined as if made with a fine ink quill. Hair, face, robe, all golden and flowing as would an electric charge, perhaps even a nuclear charge. This was energy personified. As its form took on a more solid shape, all that was behind it did as well. It was as if the entire canvas of white I had come to at the end of the tunnel was now alive, and I was part of it. Other figures appeared in front and behind the being and myself, some winged, most not, some fully formed, others not. Yet even others appeared only as glowing orbs of light and color, bouncing as with bubbles in a glass of carbonated water. I could stand it no longer. Every emotion I had ever known was welling up in me tenfold, just when I thought to speak, to question. The being spoke to me. Its voice was as a chorus of voices. Not male, not female, not loud, not soft, not deep, but perfect and all-encompassing. As I looked at the two gigantic, magnificent beings dressed in brilliant capes just off to its side, it said, "That is Michael and Gabriel. Michael has chosen you as his, and Gabriel shall teach you the ways." I looked past them to another large being, so beautiful but darker in contrast, as was the sprawling robe it wore. This being had eyes that pleased but pierced with his gaze. Who do you think that is, ladies and gentlemen? Archangel Lucifer, who's in charge of God's jail, hell, and also in charge of the demons of hell. And the light being said, "That is he who you said has been cast out. You, who I have given choice, may go with any of these of your choosing." He wound up choosing Michael, Oh, by the way, I don't believe that Archangel Lucifer was cast out. Because if you think that he was cast out, then you're saying that God is not omnipotent or all-knowing. Because why would a being who is omnipotent and omniscient create a being who would rebel? He would know would rebel, and who would have equal power to God and try to usurp God's authority. It doesn't happen that way. God does not make mistakes. Archangel Lucifer's role is to be in charge of the demons of hell and run hell. He works for God. That's what I believe. But if you want to believe anything else, that's up to you. So there's one other part of this near-death experience I want to talk about. He goes through all these visions, and there's a really cool ending here. And he shows him a lot of fighting going on Earth. You gotta find it. He sees armies fighting against armies. Hopefully that won't happen. Here it is. There were scenes of men in uniform killing other men in uniforms. I recognized some of the insignias, and some were from the USA. There were also thousands of them not in uniforms, killing even more thousands not in uniform. People, why are we doing that? We are brothers and sisters in spirit. Brothers and sisters. Brothers and sisters. It was like looking at toy figures, moving on their own, mowing down other figures, different countries, different nations, different religions, different weapons, different decades, but always resulting in hundreds of thousands dead and dying. Why do we do that? Why? I wanted out of there. I could feel the pain these people were suffering. I asked the being, why was this? And how long was this to go on? And the being said to me, man will prey, P-R-E-Y, on man, until man will pray, P-R-A-Y, for man. How about that, ladies and gentlemen? If we were hit by an asteroid, and you know our scientists are infallible, they're not perfect. In other words, what I was trying to say is that with our limited technology, we're able to tell some of the asteroids that are out there that could be dangerous to Earth, you know, especially the larger ones. And you know our Earth was hit by an asteroid before in the past. If we got hit by, say, an asteroid that was 1 mile in diameter, don't you know that this world could possibly stop rotating on its axis? And when the Earth stops rotating on its axis, all of a sudden, there are earthquakes everywhere, and volcanoes begin to explode and spew ash into the atmosphere, and that ash can block out the sun, and then storms start to form with winds in excess of 300 miles an hour. All this because of a huge asteroid. So what's to say, ladies and gentlemen, that there might not be one out there that has our planet written on it, that God may want to end humanity, just like supposedly what happened in the Bible with Noah. Do you think we've improved from back then, the way people were, the evil, if you will? I don't like using the word evil, but comparing ourselves to back then, is there a lot of evil still going on in the world? Yes. And so, people like me and I've seen a lot, heard a lot of good things from people. I've seen a lot of beautiful people out there. And most of us are, as I've mentioned before, just a small minority of the troublemakers, if you will. Some of these shows on BBS radio, I've listened to them. There's some beautiful, amazingly intelligent people. And the artistic people, the musical people, they're all really what's keeping this world going. They're making the world a better place. And I ask you, everyone, please, help make the world a better place. Do your part. Find your gift. Like I did today. That was fun today down there at this place where we had a fundraiser for that woman who was hit by a car, almost died. She survived. It was a miracle, really. She did survive. And I talked with her and gave her a hug. And so, this world could end quickly. God wanted to end it, it could. And would you be ready? What about if we learned that there was an asteroid on its way and we had 3 days to live, and that would be our best nuclear missiles couldn't hit this target in the outer space moving thousands of miles an hour, you know, because that's like a too difficult task to accomplish. Not only send our missiles into outer space, but then maybe a few more thousands of miles, and then trying to hit it exactly, and then hoping that will make a difference. You know, but what if it broke into many different pieces? What if it was 10 miles wide or 100 miles wide? There are asteroids like that out there. Would you be ready? What would you do? I bet you'd listen to BBS radio and tell your friends to listen to it. You'd learn all you could about spirituality, what was going to happen when you died, what the afterlife was like. You'd read more about near-death experiences, people that were abducted by extraterrestrials, anything that you could get your hands on, any knowledge that would deal with what we could expect, so you would be better prepared, right? But anyway, just a thing. What if, right? I'm saying this because we need to awaken as a humanity. It's like, you know, a long time ago when people said the world was flat, the moon was blue, Pluto was round. That was actually a frame of mind back then. People thought the world was flat. And then before Copernicus, people thought that the Earth was the center of the universe. And we need to awaken as a humanity and realize we're part of an intergalactic community, that the universe is teeming with life. And there is a movement to stop that. And it's all got to do with money. You know, the people who, the billionaires who are in charge of a lot of things in the world, they're just human beings like you and I, but there seems to be a movement, a cover up of an intergalactic community out there. We're discovering planets each and every day out there. NASA is making great strides in proving and help trying to prove that there is life out there. And how would you feel if you knew that there was life out there? Would that change your mind in regard to anything? I think it would. I think we realize that God is more real. If we knew that we had some other, God's other children out there, you know, other beings, other sentient beings, And don't you know, that's one of the reasons they're not openly interacting with us right now, is because we're going through this evolutionary process and we're still a violent species. But we are making progress. Please help to make the world a better place so we can be star travelers. Don't you want to be star travelers like in Star Trek? We could have been that already. You know, there's technology that is being covered up, I think. But let me tell you this quick story about a man who was abducted by these extraterrestrials. His name is Michael Desmarquette, and he wrote a book called Abduction to the Ninth Planet. He was living in Australia. I think it was 1987. And one night he went outside. He had been trying to sleep and he couldn't sleep. And something beckoned him to his outer patio. He went out there with all the flowers off, landings, I think they're called. And all of a sudden, he got beamed up into this spaceship. This extraterrestrial race is from the planet Thyuba. In our Milky Way galaxy, supposedly they're one of the three most technologically and spiritually advanced in our galaxy. In fact, they are monitors. They are guardians of our planet. Not the galaxy, the guardians of the planet. Indeed, they've been monitoring our planet for thousands of years and watching all that's been going on. They are hermaphrodite, 9 feet tall. And they interacted with some of the civilizations on Earth in the past, like on Easter Island. Those statues that were carved were made in their image. The spacecraft that he was beamed up into was circular, approximately 70 meters in diameter, so about 200 feet in diameter. They actually beamed him up into their spaceship while they were in the parallel universe, which exists alongside Earth. It's like another dimension, a fourth dimension, if you will. And so they took him to their planet. I don't know how many light years away, but their spaceship was able to travel several times the speed of light, going through all the different solar systems on the way to their planet. And he said how beautiful some of these planets look. All the brilliant, beautiful colors, multicolored planets, just beautiful creations. And even our solar system, even some of the planets, you might not think they serve a purpose, but they do. Just because they don't have the atmosphere to house human beings does not mean that they weren't created without a purpose. Take the planet Jupiter, for example, which is mainly gas, but I submit to you it has a solid core. And as I mentioned in my last show, the moon Ganymede has a race of human beings living on it. And what about Neptune, Saturn, beautiful creations? And so he saw all these planets on the way to their planet. And then they landed on their planet, and he said, it was so beautiful, and the atmosphere was like golden. It was like gold dust in the atmosphere. The colors of their planet was just like our own, with trees and oceans, all types of vegetation, but larger than here. Trees were 200 feet tall. The oceans and seas were pristine clear, but the colors were what really struck him, so intense. And so he spent 10 days on that planet. Their habitations are like eggs, like half an egg, eggshells, which cover the surface of the planet. And they took him to one where he spent those 10 days. And he got to talk with them, and he gained a lot of knowledge from them on
everything related to our past and everything that's going on with our planet, our evolution. They showed him some of their powers, what they're able to do. They have mastered the art of telekinesis and levitation. They took him to some beings which are like their council of elders, if you will. I mean, just masters in spiritual natures, incredible stuff like making human bodies, which I've mentioned in another show. They can actually make a human body. Imagine that. Using the cosmic powers that exist. Words put things into effect. But these are masters. They call them the Thiora. They exist there. And they have a different function than the actual beings that pick them up on the spaceship. And they're space travelers. It's one of their functions. They have other planets that they're in charge of. One, as mentioned in the book, is a planet called Arimo X3, a civilization that destroyed themselves in the nuclear holocaust. And they took them there so you could see what happened to them. Because the idea was when he got back, when Michael Desmarais got back, he would write a book. And indeed, he is an incredible author. I don't know if he had written any books before then, but nevertheless, he had a great way of putting things into words, describing, you know, exactly what happened to him and the advice that they gave him to share with us. So they knew that he was a very advanced soul and he would impart that knowledge that they gave him to us in the way that they wanted him to. So he was there for 10 days. And then he had to come back. And he wrote that book, Abduction to the Ninth Planet. And going back to Arimo X3, he got a good chance to see, you know, these Polynesian-type people that existed on that planet. Of course, they were living in the aftermath of a nuclear holocaust. And so they were, all the vegetation was destroyed. But they're able to intervene in planets. What's the right way of putting it? They're able to intervene, but only in limited ways. They can't, like, give people a plate and their food on it to eat, if you know what I mean. People have to do some stuff on their own. And if they make a mistake, like getting into a nuclear holocaust in the first place, then they have to pay the penalty. Let me tell you something. If it happened to us, all the vegetation would be wiped off, all the animal life. There would be fish in the sea, but it would be contaminated with radiation. And so what we would have would be generations and generations of birth defects from the radiation. Also, the insects would survive, and many of them would be mutated. They would be many times the size they are right now. Like ants could grow as big as cows, like on that planet. And there would be a formidable predator, you know, with their mandibles. And he described a situation where he saw an ant cut a man in half with his mandibles. Creatures like, insects like praying mantises or cockroach, even an ordinary cockroach would be like 2 feet tall, you know, 2 feet long, all because of the radiation. Radiation mutates. I don't know if you knew that. And so they did what they could to help these people, but they were only, they can only do so much because the law of the universe is if you make a mistake, you have to pay the penalty. That's what God, the original creator's intent was. You know, that we'd be held accountable for our actions. So anyway, Michael Desmarais came back and he wrote that book, Abduction to the Ninth Planet. It is the best book I've ever read. It is an amazing book. I've read it several times. And he suggested we do so also so you can get everything that he's trying to say. Everything that these extraterrestrials told him to share with us is in the book. So just like a near-death experience, a lot of great knowledge can be gleaned from these experiences that people have. That was Shakira in the background barking. Shakira, I'm trying to do my radio show here.
anyway, it's getting dark here. The stars are coming out. Well, they're always there, right? They're really suns. Anyway, I had some other stuff I wanted to talk about. I'll write things down. Reincarnation. Oh, I'll talk about reincarnation next week. You know the types of angels? Let me tell you the types of angels.
Hey, hey, come here. Come here. Hey, come on.
Too loud. Okay, the types of angels. There are eight. I learned this from different people to include Sylvia Brown, the great psychic medium, who recently passed away, may God bless her soul. Seraphims. They surround our spirit parents' throne. That's right, there is a spirit, mother and father, mother God and father God. And they're so bright they appear to be on fire. The missions are typically of a heavenly nature only. Cherubims. Some have four faces. Human, lion, oxen, and eagle. They are incredibly powerful angels. They handle only the grace of tasks to be accomplished in heaven and throughout the solar system. Dominions. They monitor and are responsible for functions of the solar system to include the rotation and revolution of the planets. Virtues. And these angels, they have different colored wings or different colored tips, you know, like whether it's green or rose or blue. Virtues. They monitor and are responsible for the atmospheric conditions on the planets. Let me take that away. Principalities. They monitor, are responsible for the many different cultures on Earth. They can intercede if and when necessary. Archangels. As I was mentioning, Archangel Michael, Gabriel, and Lucifer. Archangels answer specific requests for assistance through thought and prayer. They are, Michael provides defense, protection.
Let me just reduce this. I think it's 9 o'clock. I don't have much more time. I have 1 minute.
Okay. Well, I'll continue this next week. So let me just say a quick prayer. Dear Creator of the universe, thank you for everything. Thank you for your love. Thank you for the miracles of creation. Please bless us, everyone on earth. Be with us. Thank you for all the good things. Thank you for our blessings. Thank you. 1,000 thank yous for everything. You are wonderful, magnificent. Amazing, incredible, and awesome. Thank you, God. Thank you, Creator. And so I wish all of you a happy week next week. Take care. I love you. And I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.